This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN, this show produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. Tom Gimbel is a regular, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. You can visit the LaSalleNetwork.com. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you, John Williams.
You told Pete, let's talk a little bit about how to grow and scale companies and cultures. I don't even know what that means. I've heard scale, but I don't know what that means in a business sense. What are we talking about here?
Well, I think what got Pete and I thinking was the Crain's list came out, Crain's Chicago Business List of the largest privately held companies. And there's ones that have been on there for forever in Chicago that are, you know, do billions of dollars in revenue. And then there's companies that are new on the list and how you grow. But if you're going to scale a company, it's how do you increase your sales, your revenue number? Is it purely through traditional marketing, new digital marketing? Is it e-commerce? Or is it a sales force? You know, we like to call them the business feet on the street, where you have salespeople out there pounding the pavement, and how you grow a business and do that in order to continually achieve more and more revenue and make lists like the Crain's list or the Inc. 500 or things like that.
Yeah, which I guess is what everybody is reaching for, another rung up the ladder. Is there a universal answer? What do growing businesses do to achieve?
Well, I think the goal is, if you start a company, you do it for a variety of reasons. Nobody wants to go out of business if you start a company, whether it's a restaurant or a B2B, business-to-business enterprise. So the goal is to make money, to make profits. Now, you might not want to be the next, Jeff Bezos, but you want to make a comfortable living. And then secondarily, you want to be able to provide opportunities either for the people you serve or the employees that work for you. And if you don't grow, how are you doing those things? And I think the number one thing is to figure out, A, what is your core business service that you're offering? Number two is, how much capital do you have and how much are you willing to risk in order to grow the business? And number three is how you're going to manage the people and build that up. And if you know those things, then you can capitalize on your strengths. There's a lot of people out there that have great ideas, but they're not professional managers, and that's where you get into the founder-co-founder relationship.
I wonder if continue to advertise on WGN Radio is one of the keys to growing a business. And I'm only kidding a little bit, because I see businesses all the time that are trying to increase revenue and profitability. And then you say, well, how do you get that message out? How do you reach more customers? I mean, isn't that pretty key?
It absolutely is. And you have to figure out what your demographic is, who it is, and where they spend their time. And so there's obviously media and marketing companies that do that and say, this is the demographic that listens to the John Williams show versus the Bob Surratt show versus Saturday nights at midnight versus Tuesday afternoons. And then you have how likely are they to buy and what the revenue is. So, you know, there's a great book called The E-Myth Revisited. And I read it 26 years ago, right before I started my company. And it's just about the concept of being great at something doesn't necessarily make you a great entrepreneur. And to start a business and to grow it, and that's why people will end up hiring, entrepreneurs will end up hiring professional managers and professional sales leaders to come into their organization and be a part of it to help scale it. Because it's one thing to have a good idea, it's another thing to be able to grow and scale the business.
Well, that's something your business has done, because you guys are now on that Crain's list of the largest privately held companies in the Chicago area. So if you put your finger on one or two things, what would you say has made your business more successful?
Well, I'd say there's a few things. You know, number one is, as a founder, I'm still involved day to day. I'm still working a ton, as you know, and I love the business. And I think that passion bleeds into other areas of the business, number one. Number two is I've been able to retain my team. So my executive management team averages over 10 years of time with me. So they've been here for a long time, and that creates stability within the organization. And then lastly, which is probably one of the harder things to do in addition to retention, is we continually hire people. And we hire a lot of kids right out of college, and we train them. And it's their first job out of college. So they don't all stay. And so you've got to make sure that you continually hire enough to make up for those that realize that, you know, their first or second job isn't going to be their forever one, and you got to keep reinvesting in the business.
Just to toot our own horn a little bit here, one of our sponsors, Scooter Andreas, you know, Andreas Concrete Construction People, just texted in. He said, speaking of demographics, they started advertising with David Hochberg and Lou Manfredini, and he says sales went up 50%. I guess they knew where people in the trades were or people trying to improve their properties were. Those would be two logical places, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you with Lou Manfredini's show, and he's got a very loyal, dedicated audience, and for people that want to learn more about how to do that in the trades and doing concrete, that's a perfect example of knowing where your audience is.
Got an audience for you anytime, Tom. Thanks for your help today. Let's visit again next week.
You're the best, John. Stay healthy.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Craig Bolanos is the founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. He joins us frequently to talk about markets and the economy. And maybe a fair question to start with today, Craig, is, look, inflation is here. So what's a business or an individual to do? What advice do you have for us?
Well, I mean, in managing the business, it's all about the operating margins. But for everybody who's an individual, you don't even need to be an investor. I would suggest that you could be a saver, John, and people need to take a look. Here's the headline story. If someone wants to participate in the highest yield ever recorded in the history of government-issued Series I bonds, the time to strike is now. We're talking about 9.62% interest to be paid as of May 1st of this year. I think that will take the edge off inflation for a lot of savers listening to our business hour.
That's the thing. Everybody's chasing inflation. So you get this, you get that on various products or ideas, but then inflation just kills it. This is higher than the inflation rate right now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, inflation is the silent killer. You and I have talked before. Everybody thinks the silent killer is hypertension. It's not. The silent killer is inflation. And we've got to do whatever we can in various facets of our financial ecosystem, whether that's in the business or us personally, to take the edge off. And I just want to say again that Series I bonds are a great solution for savers right now to utilize to feel that they're tackling inflation head on as opposed to simply being victimized by such.
Is there a limit to how much you can buy when you buy I bonds, and how long does that rate last? What are the terms?
No, that's a great question. So these are Series I savings bonds. You might remember the good old-fashioned single E, double E.
Yep.
We don't want these. So Series I bonds. John, anytime something is so good, there's a limit on how much you can buy. The answer is $10,000 per person per year. There is a back door to get another $5,000 in through a tax refund, but generally speaking, the most we can buy is $10,000 per year. To your point, and very astute, the amount of, you know, the I in I bond, you know, doesn't stand for interest. The I in I bond stands for inflation. So it's inflation that leads to the amount of interest a Series I bond is going to earn, and that interest is recalculated twice per year. So right now, bonds that were issued in November of 2021 through the end of this month, April of 2022, have been humming along at a very nice 7.12% interest rate. Those existing bonds that somebody owns or new bonds that somebody may buy as of May 1st will now jump to 9.62%, and that'll be good May through October 31st, when we'll take a look at inflation again and reprice the amount of interest to be paid.
To belabor the obvious, then, $10,000 in, 9.62 means it generates $962 worth of interest. Is that the math on that?
That's correct. And that's an APR. That's an annual percentage rate. So you're going to be earning an APR of 9.62% over the next 6 months. But yes,
you can't cash it in right away. You have to, there's penalties for early withdrawal, right?
No, that's right. You know, we always have to mind the details, and that's why we give these sincere and actionable ideas on your show. And what people need to know is this. If you buy any savings bonds, Series I bonds, you need to hold those bonds for at least 12 months. So this is not your emergency fund that you want to go and raid because you ran out of cash to tip the pizza delivery guy. This is a part of that emergency fund that's going to need to sit on the shelf for at least 12 months. In addition to that, any bonds that you redeem prior to 60 months or 5 years will be subject to something called partial interest forfeiture. Now, John, that sounds terrible, but what it basically means is if you redeem your bonds in less than 5 years, you give up the last 3 months of interest. So if I owned them for 21 months, I only get 18 months of interest. If I owned them for 24 months, I only get 21 months of interest. I don't think that's a bad deal, though, given how hot inflation is, making the interest components of Series I bonds equally good.
That $962, I imagined, is that what you realized then after 5 years?
No, so John, let's pretend that the interest rate was fixed over the course of 12 months. And remember, it's variable, changes twice per year. But yes, if someone had a 9.62% APR on a $10,000 order of Series I savings bonds, they would collect $962 over the course of 12 months.
Over the course of 12 months, if it were fixed, but it's not, so it floats. And what do we think is going to happen? I mean, it almost sounds like a teaser rate, like, of course I want to get 962, but it's not going to be that in 6 months or in 18 months, is it?
Well, no. Well, from your lips to everyone's ears, yeah. Because I am hoping that come November 1st, these actions that are being taken by the Federal Reserve, these actions that are happening in all parts of the financial ecosystem, what I call putting people back to work, fixing the supply chain, odds are we come to Halloween, come November 1st, these I bonds are going to reset their interest rate. Courtesy of inflation, I don't think inflation is going to be running at 9%, but I do think inflation is still going to be well above the Federal Reserve's target of 2%. So if people are looking as an alternative to a money market, they're looking as an alternative to a CD, and they're comfortable having some money sit on the shelf for the next 12 months, this is an opportunity that many, if not all, should take a look at.
I'm really glad you said that. Now I've got 18 more questions, and I'm out of time, so maybe I'll just call you after the show. How does that sound, Craig?
Anytime, John. 833-WMG-PLAN. Pick up the phone and give me a buzz.
Craig Bolanos is the founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. I think that's an invitation for you to invest with WMG.com. Thanks for your time, Craig.
John, great to be back.
Ryan Griffiths is in our studio now. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. He's a clinic manager for Athletico Physical Therapy. He's the guy at the Lakeview East location, which puts him in the 3,000 block of North Broadway.
Correct.
Yeah, welcome to the studio. How
Thanks.
Are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, John.
We had a night. I'm trying to remember if we went by your location then. We did a walk from WGN Radio to Wrigley Field last year. I think we're going to do something like that again when the weather gets a little bit warmer, walk to one of the ballparks. But I don't remember if we went by your location, but you'd kind of be on the way to Wrigley, wouldn't you?
I think so.
Yeah. So what do you do? What's your job over there?
So I am the clinic manager at our Lakeview East location, as well as a physical therapist. So while treating patients, I'm also managing our clinic and
How's
staff.
Business these days for you guys?
We are busy, especially with days like Saturday, where a lot of people are more out and about, walking, biking. We are seeing a lot more patients coming in our doors.
Really? So Saturday was 80 degrees. Now we're back to 42. But everybody went out and they were gardening and exercising and biking and doing things like that. And then Monday they say, oh, I did too much. Is that what happens?
Yeah, I believe so. I think you were also mentioning that yourself.
You know what I did on Saturday that I haven't done in a while? I was taking grounders. My son brought his mitts and glove and bat over and ball, and we were playing ball. And he hits me a grounder to my left, and I went, oh, I can't do that now. I'm not as laterally able as I used to be. I'm mm-hmm. sure this doesn't shock you.
No, it doesn't. And I'd say that happens to a lot of us. So at Athletico, what we try to educate our patients on is, you know, we don't move in these side-to-side motions as frequently as we maybe did before. So some of the things that we can do is educate on some warm-up before you're doing some activities with your family or friends.
Yeah. Well, I'm not usually taking grounders, but I'm... But I'm, you know what, I'm sure plenty of us were doing a lot of stuff, like you said, Saturday, and we will the next good day we have, that we hadn't been doing for 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's gardening, or if it's golfing, or if it's taking a jog down the path, what advice do you have for people generally now that we're getting back out?
Yeah, that's a great point. What I would recommend, John, is realizing that the place that you ended at in the previous fall, or if you were running in the summer, is not the place that you should probably start at as you start with the nicer weather coming in. So there should be a relative ramp-up period of some form of a warm-up, and you may have to start, you know, with some stretches more frequently than you would at the end of the golf season or just that activity. So giving yourself some time to kind of walk before your run, or walk at a slower pace before you kind of pick up to your walking pace with your friends.
Walking seems so soft to me. I mean, does it really matter? Is walking really beneficial?
It's extremely beneficial for a lot of different aspects, both mental and physical health, but it is still strain on your body. And especially if you're walking to the Cubs Stadium over at Wrigley, I'm bad with directions, but that's at least 4 or 5 miles from here.
I'd say it's about that, yeah. So then when somebody goes to walk, are there stretching exercises we do along the way? What do we do right? What do we do wrong?
That's a great question. So as you start walking, some of the things we educate our patients at Athletico with is taking the time to stop maybe in between if you have a longer walk, just to stretch out your calf muscles on the back of your legs, or same with your hamstrings. If you're starting to feel some discomfort or some pain, not just pushing through it, like you said, but you'll actually take the time to kind of address it and then go about your walk.
You made the point off the air that there's a difference between pain and discomfort. What are you talking about there?
I think discomfort is just natural in life. Sometimes when you push yourself, it may not be the most comfortable thing. Pain is something that lingers beyond that event and continues to bother you when you're not doing that activity.
So does pain mean I've done something wrong in your estimation?
It can. Sometimes it's your body's way of telling you that what you asked it to do may have been too much, or you may have been moving in the wrong way.
But if I'm sore the next day after whatever it is I shouldn't have done, should I sort of stretch or exercise that area more to make it stronger so I get through this next time?
John, that's a great question that I think it's hard for us as physical therapists to tell you individually right now. I think we can always speculate that, yeah, you should probably be stronger, you should be more limber beforehand, you should drink more water. But the thing that Athletico does great is if it's something that's continuing to bother you beyond just catching the grounders from this weekend, we offer the free assessments at our clinic to most insurances, which allows patients to come in and get a consultation from a licensed physical therapist so that we can actually individualize what may be leading to some of that those deficits.
So what do you do if somebody comes in for that assessment? How do you assess my ability or discomfort?
Yeah, it's what we do at Athletico. Just we take it at an individualized basis of taking you through some of our objective tests and some
What would an example be?
So for you, I would like to see, you know, how you're squatting. If picking things up from the ground is uncomfortable or painful.
All right, so you want me to go like this down?
Yeah,
squatted, but I put my hand on my knee while I did it. You're going to watch that and ask me questions about that?
You know, I typically tell people, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I want to see, as you do certain activities throughout our assessment, is it making it feel better, worse, or the same? And as we start to get a better idea of how you're moving and some of the strength around the muscle or your body and flexibility around different areas, it tells me what are the areas that may be resulting in some of your pain and discomfort.
Right. And it would seem to me like there's a lot of chatter these days about your core. So from your abdomen through your butt and your thighs, right? That's the area we want to make stronger, isn't it?
It typically is. You know, I went to the University of Iowa and we had a saying of, you don't fire a cannon from a wobbly ship. So if you don't have a strong core at your foundation, it's hard to generate some power and some strength in your other extremities like your hand and your feet. Or your
so
legs.
I would do these exercises or these movements. You would ask me better, worse, the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on what I was saying, you would what, draw up some exercise regimen for me to get stronger?
Yeah, so we will develop some individualized plans, whether it's avoiding certain activities. It doesn't always have to be only strengthening and stretching and going through some of our manual techniques. Sometimes it's, hey, you have been doing it this way and we're going to...
You've been doing it wrong.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'd like is Brendan and I are leading a group of WGN radio listeners on some trips. We're going to Scotland in June. We're going to be walking around Scotland, up and down the hills, through the castles and all that. And then next fall, or in the fall of... No, in the spring of 2023, we're going to lead a cruise through the Greek Isles. All of that to say that these trips, sometimes you're doing a lot of walking and hiking up and down hills. And I want everybody that's going to travel with us to go to Athletico or something like that, because the last thing you want to be is the person in a group and you're not ready for the walking and the climbing that you got to do. And then everybody's got to wait for you. Better that we sort of get in shape for the trip now rather than come back and say, ooh, I'm sore today, right?
Yeah, I think we do a lot of things at Athletico for injury prevention as much as our post-operative rehabilitation. So what we pride ourselves in the 60 clinics across the Chicagoland area and the numerous states that we're in is, you know, we do direct access evaluations for individuals. You may not even have a script from your physician. You can come in for most insurances to see us if you have a trip, like you said, planned.
You don't need a prescription. My back's a little sore today.
Right.
I came in and said my back's a little sore today. And by the way, my back is a little sore today.
I can help you out with that.
I'll bet you. I don't know that you could. I mean, what would you do about my back right now?
In terms of after we went through a full assessment or that evaluation, we can start the process right there and prescribe you some exercises, stretches, in addition to some manual techniques to get you moving in the right direction.
And then you got to do it. That's the hard part.
There is, yeah. There is some ownership. And in addition to coming in and seeing us doing some of the things at home, because our goal is to get you back to doing the things that you want to be doing with less pain or pain-free for that matter.
Well, I'm glad that business is good for you guys, and I hope that, you know, it's going to help people that either are hearing this message now for the first time or been doing it for a while. And if you're going to travel with me, please make sure that you're ready. Ryan Griffith is a clinic manager for Athletico Physical Therapy, the Lakeview East location. Athletico.com is the website we push. Ryan, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, John, for having me.
I hope that helped. It's 1244 on WGN. More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The group that owns JCPenney has offered $8.5 billion to acquire rival retailer Kohl's. Simon Property Group and Brookfield Asset Management made the official bid yesterday. Kohl's shares jumped 4.5% after the announcement. The prospective new owners would reportedly keep the two brands separate while cutting Kohl's costs by nearly $1 billion. Kohl's has been under pressure by activist investors to pursue a sale and has hired Goldman Sachs to engage with potential buyers. Offers to buy the Wisconsin company back in February were reportedly too low. Simon Property and Brookfield bought JCPenney for $1.7 billion in 2020 after it filed for bankruptcy. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander's away today. We've still got the business of food. This is Kelsey Kernstein.
Some farmers telling me getting parts for their combines and tractors has really been a struggle ever since COVID. One farmer tells me that the part he needed took 5 months to get.
Luckily, it did not stop us from harvesting.
That's Craig Robertson, an Illinois farmer whom I met last October. He ordered a part 5 months ago, and he tells me it only recently arrived. A part, he says, that normally takes just 3 days to get.
We're used to whatever you got to do to get the job done.
And when I asked him what the company blamed the delay on, he was told supply chain issues.
We have a hard time understanding, you know, supply chain issues, why other people don't think like we do. you know, you got to do what you got to do to get the job done.
Rain, shine, or bad weather, Robertson says little stops him and his friends from cultivating and harvesting their crops. But some of his friends, not so lucky, forced to stop work, losing crops, or waiting days to begin working again.
The dealer had to bring him out a totally another, a different machine because they couldn't get that electronic part because of the shortage of computer chips.
To add to the supply chain issues, the cost of grains, fertilizers, and gas are all up. In fact, raw materials that make up fertilizers are up 30% since the beginning of the year. And fuel up more than a dollar since this time last year.
Me and my friends, we're not the type to quit real easy. So I'm not ready to get out of farming. I don't want to get out of farming.
And when I asked Robertson, who is going to feel the brunt of these costs?
Just be prepared for higher food prices. The expenses to grow food have gone up a lot. And those expenses are going to be passed right down to the consumer.
With the business of food, I'm Kelsey Kernstein for WGN.
Amy Guth, let's talk starting now about consumer confidence. I presume it's down just given the way things are going. What are you seeing or hearing today?
Well, it's down, but not as much as one might guess. It's really just very, very slight. When we're looking at all these kind of consumer-based indexes, they really kind of paint a picture of where people are thinking, you know, what people are thinking now and what they're thinking kind of down the road, what they think is going to happen in the next 6 months to a year or so. And so essentially, when we're looking at the numbers about consumer confidence, in April, that index was 107 point, I'm sorry, in March, it was 107.6, and in April, 107.3. So down just a tiny bit. Also, the present situation index, which is really kind of just asking about the immediate assessment from consumers about business and labor conditions, that's also a modest dip. So it was 153.8 in March and now 152.6. So another little dip there. The expectations index, though, that's the one kind of the 6 month outlook when we're asking people about income and business and labor market conditions and asking them to kind of read the tea leaves a bit, what they think is going to happen in the next 6 months. That has continued to be kind of a weak spot in the survey. So in March, it was 76.7, and it ticked up a little bit to 77.2. So consumer confidence down a little bit, but kind of when we look at that, what do you think is going to happen in the next few months? It does get a little bit sunnier.
Well, the fact that it's not worse to me is sunny. Let's talk about United Airlines. This is maybe an optimistic outlook, too. They're increasing transatlantic flights.
Yeah, exactly what it is. And so they are increasing their, as you said, their transatlantic flights in anticipation of a big recovery in European summer travel. So they're going to add flights. They're boosting capacity 25% over what they were in 2019 levels. So that is a very, very optimistic bet right there. They're also going to resume flying to 18 European cities. They said that's kind of their largest transatlantic expansion in history. So we're talking a lot of flights. And of course, that's the biggest carrier out of O'Hare. United is based here. So that's an airline we watch very closely here, of course, but really kind of paints a picture because a lot of airlines have been operating pretty much in lockstep. A lot of the leadership have been talking about summer travel, but so United kind of being out ahead and talking about this move. They're making a very, very big bet that people are ready. There's going to be pent-up demand, and they're going to be taking some really big trips. So kind of reconciling that with maybe a little bit of hesitation around inflation and things like that, airlines are still kind of betting big, even despite fuel price and things like that yeah. might factor in and airline tickets going up in those prices. Nonetheless, they're betting that people are going to want to get outside and take some very big trips this summer.
You've been talking about various indices. I did not know there was somebody tracking the cost of breakfast in America.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Bloomberg kind of assembled this. They were taking a look at the Agriculture Department's monthly outlook, and the agency sees a little bit of a gain when we're looking at pricing futures. So from 6 to 7% gain. That's a pretty big change from about 3 months ago, because it predicted a range of either about a point, half a point percentage point rise to a half a percentage point drop when we're looking at some of these items, particularly eggs, cereal, bakery products, the things we lean on for breakfast, fruit, things like that. And a lot of this has to do with what's happening in Ukraine. So Ukraine and Russia together account for about a quarter of the world's trade in wheat and for about a fifth of corn sales. So when we're thinking about breakfast cereals, things like that, there's a lot of things that we associate with breakfast foods here in the United States that are going to be tied up in that wheat and corn issue of less of it coming out of the outflow of it from Ukraine.
Yeah, no kidding. Elon Musk, Tesla shares have reflected his purchase of Twitter. How?
Yeah. So yesterday when we talked, it was kind of imminent, that news, and that news did come forward that he is purchasing Twitter. That deal is expected to close later in the year. But what we started to see is that Tesla shares started to fall as investors were kind of maybe questioning, is he going to be spread too thin? What does this mean for Tesla? And kind of they were reacting to the prospect of him using his shares to pay for the acquisition of Twitter. So when I checked just before we started talking, they were down, Tesla shares were down about 11% earlier. So I think it'll be very interesting to watch his other businesses and confidence in those other business units. Of course, SpaceX is also part of his empire and the things that he's doing. There's a lot of speculation, of course, around what he's going to do with Twitter, how it might change under his leadership. But that's also not preventing people who have an investment in the other businesses, particularly Tesla, in maybe questioning what that means for him as a leader and what that will mean for their investment.
That's Amy Guth. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk later in the week. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.